Here's Terry Savage, the nationally syndicated financial columnist and author at terrysavage.com. Hi, Terry. Let's talk about the markets.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Dow chart. I said, well, good. I have a minute here. Keep talking. Let me look. And I'm looking at the all-time high Dow chart. Now, the all-time high for the Dow was made on January 4th, 2022.
So, January 4th, 2022.
Right.
I remember the Dow getting up to almost 39.
No. It was 36,000.
That's all.
799. Call it 36,800.
Yeah.
And today we're at 34,397. So I'm not great at subtracting. So let's call it
2,000 points.
34,400. Okay.
So 2,400 points.
Yeah, we're less than 2,500 points from the all-time high on the Dow, which was made a little over a year and a half ago. With all the agony. Huh. And all the interest rate insanity and all the recession is coming. You always say to me, Terry, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say just invest for the long run. You don't have to beat the market. Be the market. Look, it's been fabulous. I'm looking right here. I'm trying to see. We were down below. When was this?
I wonder what the S&P number is, too, then, relative to its all-time high.
We were below 29,000.
The S&P's doing better this
October,
year than the Dow.
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. So
within 10%, we're less than 10% from our all-time high. We're closing
exactly.
The gap.
So, you know, I watch like you do. I mean, what's on in the background in my office is CNBC typically. And I look around and I see the greens and the reds. I don't, you know, listen all day long. But there's so much emotional angst. There are hours of debates about whether it's just 10 tech stocks or whether the recession is coming, whether earnings will be better or worse and the interest rates and so forth. Meanwhile, you've got your 401k, you've got your S&P 500 index fund, and that's enough. Just be properly allocated so that if we get to one of those downdrafts, you can ride it out. You'll be fine.
What's happening with inflation and CPI, too?
So a bit of a surprise from expectations, slightly lower inflation.
0.2%.
Yes, it just sounds like a little bit. But what it is a continuation of a trend that's gone on the last 4 or 5 months of inflation coming down. And so now the great debate is, you know, it was just 2 weeks ago that Jay Powell, Fed chairman, said, okay, we paused, but don't take that as any kind of a sign. We're coming back because we don't believe it. We're going to raise. So we'll have the Fed will likely raise rates again by a quarter of a point. But now everybody's going, but surely that should be the end of it because inflation is coming down. So the professionals debate that all the time. You should be seeing that in food prices. Last week we talked about the perception that gas prices are high. As a matter of fact, every time I fill up, I think, yeah, I do remember when it was in the $3, not the $4 range. But oil prices have come down to around $80. So some stuff is still going up, no question about it. And there was just one more thing on inflation. There's the Older Americans League or something that puts out a forecast of what your Social Security COLA is likely to be next year.
It's going to be 9% this year.
It's going to be about 3% next year.
Yeah. I cut you off there, but no. I mean, that was the yin and yang of it last time, wasn't it? That everything was more expensive, therefore the adjustment was great, but
right. You
didn't really come out ahead because everything was more expensive.
And one other thing, when that CPI number comes out, you have this issue of, okay, what does that mean for interest rates if the Fed isn't going to be likely to raise rates again? So you saw the 10-year Treasury now yielding 3.85%. It crept up over 4% a few days ago. And what we all care about, why do I say we all? Because we buy it.
You're talking about the inversion?
No, I'm talking about the 6-month T-bill rate right now is 5.48%.
Wow.
But it was over 5.5%. It's just a couple of little basis points there. But what you're seeing is interest rates just coming down a smidge because inflation might be under control. That does not mean you should go run and do anything. When your T-bills mature, roll them over, take the then accepted rate.
Terry, before we go to calls and text messages, anything else you want to say?
Yeah, I took a break, and I'm looking at a new chart just posted this will be interesting, on CNBC. So I'm telling you where this is. It's a headline thing that breaks down inflation year over year. Now, number one, let's just talk about this. We joked about it's down. It's 3%. The Fed said when it was, it was 8%+ year over year a year ago, we're going after it. We're going to get it down to below 3% to the 2.5% level. And people thought it will take an economic crash to get us down there. And so far it hasn't.
So we're at 3%?
We're at 3% year over year in June. And we were at 4% year over year in May. And it is the lowest year over year price increase in 2 years. And they broke down on this chart. It's a graphic of where inflation was in year over year. And I'm going to show you some of the things that went down. I'll tell you a few that are still up. Remember last week we started talking about gasoline and I went to our WGN website and looked at the price. Gasoline prices year over year this month down 27%. That's a gallon of regular unleaded. Health insurance. Don't ask me how.
How does that change? How would I notice that?
How would I even notice that? I mean, forget whether it's your Medicare supplement, maybe if you're older, but if you're at work, I don't think the employers have passed on a break in their deductions. But it says health insurance down 24.9%. Airline fares down 18.9%. My gosh, I went through a couple of airports in the last few weeks, and it's jam. So
why would they raise interest rates again?
Natural gas down 18%. So energy as a category down over 16%.
Hey, this time last year, you said, you watch out. This is going to be a hard winter for your gas bills. Are you hearing anything about the cost of
natural gas? You know, and we thought
about
Ukraine and Russia and everything, and we thought, oh my goodness, that's going to send... it did in Europe, by the way. Europe is still dealing.
It wasn't cheap
dealing.
Here last winter either.
It wasn't, but not as bad as it could have been. That's primarily because of China's economic slowdown took some of the global pressure off commodities.
Oh, really?
They're the wild card, the swing card. Do you remember when we discussed eggs? Because egg prices soared for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I know the chickens didn't get a raise, so that couldn't have been it.
I think it was the bird flu.
But they said it was the bird flu, and it was also because they could. So year over year now, just you can use this for your dinner table conversation, egg prices are down 7.9%. And I really always compare egg prices.
Do they need
Terry,
do they need to raise interest rates then? Isn't it near the target and it's coming down? Why would you layer on more interest?
Well, let me just tell you something. So far, I mean, I never have ever believed, I mean, for 30 or 40 years, that 11 unelected people could make decisions that could guide a whole economy when they can't influence federal spending and they can't influence federal deficits. Their only tools are basically interest rates. I always thought that was insane. But think about it. They have managed to bring down inflation while keeping people employed and the economy going. You remember the word soft landing? I hesitate to speak them because I don't want to jinx it. But with inflation now year over year at 3%, I think they got it wrong, obviously, when they thought it was transitory. But they've got it right now. Now, let's fast forward to the end of the year. What kinds of things could happen? You could have a slowdown because savings are running out. Consumers, we see from the latest credit figures, are putting less on their credit cards. We talked about they're financing their lifestyles, and most of what goes on there now is medical and basic necessities. So consumers are not spending. We're going to have the return of student loan repayments, which nobody talks about, but I want to say it again because I think someday we'll look back and say that was what toppled the momentum of the consumer.
Think about that.
But so far, so good on you, Chairman Powell. And if they think they need one more for insurance, hey, who am I to question that?
Well, I think that all of this to me, I told you off the air, I think is background noise to... Obviously, if you lose your job in a recession, then that's the only number that matters. But I think the number that most matters to people is their 401k or their retirement. Will I have what's my investment retirement like? If it's going down, then I got to work forever or eat less. If it's going back up, then I've got then I can live.
Well, that's a good point. But I would also say that there's a wide swath of people, and I'm not just talking about in retirement, although it's particularly difficult for them because they get what they get. They have what they have. But all kinds of families at what we would call middle class families, where the number inflation is really important because they see it when they pay the bills. They commute to work if they're still coming into the office. They buy the food at the grocery stores. And I think inflation... And the psychology of inflation is really important, as well as what are they doing to my stocks? you know, what's my 401k look like? I think there are just a lot of people who never before understood inflation, because the last time we had it was in the late 70s, early 80s,
okay.
who suddenly realize my money doesn't go as far, and I haven't gotten a raise, enough of a raise to keep up.
I wonder if the worry about inflation was worse than the inflation that people have gone through.
Well, I
that sounds pretty well healed. I know.
But I hear you all out there. I heard every one of you who went, wait,
fine,
what?
Fine.
No, it's not
fine.
Just the worry about inflation. We couldn't do this or that. Because a lot of people are just, this is what I get. I get my Social Security. I have a small pension. I could take so much out of my IRA if I have one, kind of a thing. So it's an immediate, do I go to the doctor or do I this?
It's 1228. Okay, your questions for Terry Savage. We've got some already, although this isn't a question. It just says there's no way in hell the Fed should raise rates.
I nominate you to the Federal Reserve.
All right, Terry, you ready?
I'm ready.
The syndicated financial columnist, terrysavage.com, 312-981-7200. Let's start with Judy. Judy, what's your question for Terry? How can we help you?
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me, Terry. I love what you do.
Amen.
Quick question for you. I just retired. Oh, side note, people, when you apply for Social Security, they have a trick question in there. They say, when do you want your benefits to start? You
uh-huh.
say a date. It actually doesn't come until a month later. Would have been nice to know. I don't know. Maybe I missed it in the application. But my question to you is, going to have some money to invest. You've been mentioning Treasury bonds at a pretty decent interest rate. I don't know anything about getting them. Does the interest rate hold? What can you tell me about those?
I can tell you everything, and more important, you can read everything. If you go to terrysavage.com and you read how to buy Treasury bills. Now, Treasury bills and U.S. savings bonds are sold at the same Treasury website called treasurydirect.gov. There are two separate articles next to each other there, how to buy Treasury bills and everything you need to know about savings bonds. At this point, if you're about to be retired, you don't want savings bonds probably, but you do want 3 or 6 month Treasury bills currently yielding close to 5.5%. And that rate changes as they renew every 6 months or every 3 months. But that has to be taken in context of your entire financial plan. And the moment you retire and reach out and say, I'm going to get some money, it's either going to be my 401k rollover or something's coming due, what do? My whole life is changing, I'm retired. There is an entire financial services industry that is raising its hand with one hand and reaching out into your wallet with the other hand and saying, I'll help you figure that out for a price, which you may not even know. So this would be a good moment to have at least one session with a fee only, which means that you meet with them and they say, yeah, we'll do a plan for you. Give them some basic information. We'll do a plan for you, or we should meet once a year, or we can help you all along the way. But they'll fully disclose their fees, no hidden commissions, and they put your interests ahead of their own. And for years, I know a bunch of them in Chicago. And I started creating a folder, I mean, years ago, when I would give three, and I had a kind of an email thing that I forwarded, here are three that I trust. But it wasn't a really good thing to do, and I wasn't in the business of making recommendations. And along came Pam Kruger, who created WealthRamp, WealthRamp.com, to do exactly that, match you up with verified fee-only fiduciary advisors. And so on my website, it says on the top right, find your trusted financial advisor. That will explain WealthRamp and who she is. And we do a podcast together, as it happens. I like her so much. And you can click on there to get to WealthRamp and do the questionnaire, and then she will literally match you up. That's what you should do. Read about T-bills. If you have spare cash that you're willing to put away for 3 or 6 months, fine. That's the safest, highest rate around. Do it all in context of, okay, I'm relatively young at 65 or 6 or 7, wherever you are. I got 20 more years. How do I plan that out?
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Hey, Judy, I have a question for you. You said there was a trick question on signing up. What was the conundrum for you, the confusion?
Yeah, it said, when do you want your benefits to start? And you know, you provide a date, and then the date came and went, and I went and talked to the office, and they said, oh, well, we pay in arrears, so
they do,
we'll
but
pay you a month.
But you do
after that.
Yeah, but you do not want to start it earlier because that means you will be penalized 8% on your check. So you do not want your start date to be listed as before your birthday at which you would get full retirement benefits. My good buddy, Larry Kotlikoff, who created MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com, and it's $39, and believe me, there's a commercial for him because it is so worth it to save you from making mistakes that could cost you 8% of your basic benefit year after year after year. Includes this as one of Social Security's what he calls scams, getting you to start a little bit early. We're working together on a project.
So does that mean, though, that Judy, then you went a month without getting any income from Social Security? You felt like you missed a month, right?
That's correct, and I'm applying well after my eligibility date. So for me personally, I wouldn't have had that impact that Terry's talking about, but yeah, that's something to be very aware of as well.
Yeah, that's a good call.
It won't
Thank
come
you,
tomorrow
Judy.
Afternoon, that's right.
Thanks for the phone call, and good luck to you. Tina, you're on with Terry Savage. What can we do for you, Tina? You're on the air.
Hey, Terry, thanks so much for taking my call. Really enjoy your shows.
Hooray.
A question I have my fiduciary financial advisor made a recommendation to me several weeks ago about placing some savings in a separate account aside that it's not in my investments at all at this time, taking some of that money set aside and putting it into, I guess you'd say kind of like a checking account and not to write checks, but a savings account where it would draw about 4.25%. But now hearing that the Fed rates have gone up for the 6 months, I think I heard you say they were at 5.25% for a 6 month T-bill.
At
Is
least.
That correct?
Yep.
Okay.
Closer to 5.5.
So, I have not taken any action on the recommendation from my advisor.
Tina.
And now hearing this seems like a no-brainer not to do it.
Tina, how do you pay your financial advisor? Do you pay a quarterly fee, an annual fee? How do you pay your advisor?
It's an annual fee.
And if you remove this amount of savings, where is the money that you're talking about sitting right now?
Just in a traditional savings account at my, it's in a money market.
Okay, and it's not a part of your overall fee? Is it a management fee that he has?
No, for my financial advisor?
Yeah. Is that advisor charging based on the total assets you have with a brokerage account or something like that, or is it just
with my various accounts as stocks are sold or purchased?
Okay,
you know, just in the whole.
What are you getting at, Terry? What are you driving?
Okay, what I'm driving at is that some financial advisors, and they're not necessarily, they probably aren't fiduciaries, say, okay, thank you, I'm just charging you a flat fee. And in fact, you're getting a discount because you have over $250,000 with me. And I've got most of it in stocks and some of it in bonds and some of it in money markets and so forth. If you would then take your money and go buy treasury bills, that's something you do on your own. You open an account at treasurydirect.gov. The instructions are at terrysavage.com. And you do that directly. It wouldn't be considered part of the assets on which you're paying a fee. I call it chicken money. It should be part of your advisor's knowledge of your total asset allocation. And I can't imagine why an advisor would steer you away from T-bills unless they were getting a fee based on all the assets that they sort of control.
Yeah, understood.
T-bills would be your own control.
Tina said a moment ago, this is a no-brainer, right?
Absolutely.
Certainly outside of his control, go ahead and put that money in a T-bill.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Open your own treasury bill account.
Yeah, I was thinking of doing that versus what their recommendations were.
I'm trying to figure out why.
They were not steering me away.
Okay.
They were not steering me away from T-bills, but I think I understand what you're saying. Thank you.
Yeah, well, you betcha. Thank you for the phone call. And really, 5.25% sounds like a lot to me.
Well, right now, in the middle of the week, but if you bought them on Monday, the yield was about 5.5%. There's an auction every Monday. You put your order in midweek and get the average rate set at the Monday auction.
312-981-7200. Call that number to talk to Terry Savage. I'll get to your text messages. A lot of those have come in as well. First, let's update you on more business news. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and here is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the the day. An upscale mini golf company based in Chicago is expanding across the country and has announced a new location in Maryland. Puttshack's new location will be in Baltimore's Harbor East and has an opening date in late 2024. The company features a tech-driven mini golf experience that targets an upscale clientele. Puttshack has 9 locations, including here in Chicago, Atlanta, Boston, Miami, Denver, St. Louis, and the United Kingdom. Governor Pritzker will lead an Illinois delegation on a trade mission to the UK this weekend. Dozens of business and education leaders will join the governor. Their first stop will be the Goodwood Festival of Speed. Pritzker will talk about the state's commitment to build electric vehicles. The trade mission will also focus on manufacturing, clean energy, and technology as the governor seeks to boost economic cooperation between Illinois and the UK. I'm Steve Grithanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, now an update on the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yes, and I'm going to quote our friend Orion Samuelson in a moment, but first, we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, big O, whenever questioned about stock or commodity prices, especially when things were soaring and people were getting giddy about their investments, he would often warn, prices never go the same direction forever. But farmland prices have sure been going the same direction for a long time, haven't they?
Yeah, they sure have. That long-term trend of ag land values has trended up since the 1920s.
Paul Shattuck knows about Midwestern farmland. He is
Senior Vice President of Real Estate at Farmers National Company.
And I want to ask you about pro athletes and other celebrities investing in farmland, but let's talk about where we are right now.
Yeah, I think maybe we've reached somewhat of a plateau after 2 really exceptional years where we're still seeing some positive growth, but it is much more modest.
And why is that?
There's been the increase in interest rates, and the increase in inputs are certainly playing a role in moderating those values.
It wasn't that many years ago when we were astounded that Illinois farmland was bringing $10,000 an acre. How about now?
There's some areas where the average approaches $20,000.
Who are the buyers?
We are still seeing that 70% of the time it is being purchased by a farmer operator.
Okay, now what about these sports stars and other celebs we've heard about buying farmland?
You know, everyone has their reason. Sometimes it might be, this is probably a good way to diversify my investment portfolio, or that's the trendy thing to do.
Now, foreigners buying our farmland, is that still a concern?
Overall, the foreign ownership of land is quite small. It's somewhere around 2% of the total market. There are some states that have decided to put some restrictions on foreign ownership. So that has definitely slowed that down.
Paul Shattuck of Farmers National Company.
FarmersNational.com is the best way to reach us.
From the farm to your belly, today is National Eat Your Jell-O Day and National Pecan Pie Day.
Pecan.
Oh, okay. Say it your way.
It's definitely pecan.
Fine. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Terry, lots of calls and text messages. Let's go fast. You
okay.
Ready? What is Terry's position on I-bonds with inflation dropping? The current rate is 4.3%.
Yep. You knew this was a long-term investment. You knew that the rates would change. It was such an attraction last fall when we had 9.67% a year ago. But we all knew the rates would change, and I warned against that. You've put money away. You're keeping up with inflation. Don't sell them. You take a 3-month penalty. Put them away. Yeah, they're not so attractive anymore unless you just want to get money out of sight, out of mind, guaranteed to keep up with inflation.
Guaranteed not to lose.
Guaranteed not to lose to inflation. Not only not to lose principal, but guaranteed not to lose to inflation if you hold them 5 years.
Sure, I was just thinking about to principal. I mean, it's an investment that at least is going to get you 4.3%.
For the 6 months.
Understood. Kevin, you're on WGN with Terry Savage. Hi.
Hey, Terry, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Hey, I've got we're just about to retire. We've got a bunch of rental properties. We're getting ready to pay them off. We're wondering what the best way to take the money out of those is without getting killed on taxes. Do we just, we've got an LLC right now. Do we form an S-Corp? Do we then take it out that way?
Okay, you can't, it's hard. First of all, you have rental properties. I think you say you're about ready to sell them. And you're going to get cash.
No, ma'am.
No, you're going to keep them
ready to retire and collect, ready to retire. They're just about paid off also, and then collect monthly income from the rental properties.
Okay. You need a really good tax advisor. I'm not that. So this is the perfect moment for you to consider whether there's a good way to recapitalize, given the fact you've probably taken depreciation over the years on those properties. Depends on your cost basis. Any way you have it, the income is going to come to you as taxable income. Rental income is taxable income at your marginal tax rate. It may impact your Medicare Part B premiums. You need an account to see if there's a way that you can do it any other way, but I think it's all coming to you as ordinary income.
Kevin, good luck to you on that. I'm going to leave you and go to Adrian. You're on WGN. What's your question for Terry Savage?
Hi, Terry, I heard your Social Security pay in arrears answer before, but I need to know when to exactly to put, what date to put in. I'm turning 70 on August 19th. I've been, holding out for 8%. Do I put August 19th on my date I wanted to start? Do I put August 1st? Do they start at the month of?
Yeah, what's the advice there?
You know what? I want to make sure I give you a big difference in this, a big, huge difference in your check. So post that on my Ask Terry blog at terrysavage.com. I'm going to call Larry Kotkoff anyway later today. And your birth date is what? Tell me again.
August 19th.
19th. I'm going to ask, and I will post that answer, and I want it to be absolutely correct. So I'll put that
on
my blog.
Thank you so
much. Okay.
Good, you bet, because if you put August 18th, you might lose 8%.
Because you weren't fully
for the entirety
exactly.
of your Social Security.
I want to get this specific answer. It may be that you don't start taking it until September.
Yeah.
I just don't know, and I want to be sure.
If you can survive a month and not know, by all means, make it the latter date. Tony, you're on WGN with Terry Savage. Tony.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. What's your question?
I think my wife might have a better idea of what's going on here. We got a letter from the IRS, and it just seems to have gone,
awry.
Awry.
It said initially that we need to contact them about our
return
because, they didn't say really because why. I guess that somebody else must have filed on us also. So I called, and a lady called me back from the IRS. I gave her all the information. She said that she would put it through. We should get our refund in nine weeks, which would have been the beginning of June. I didn't check then, but I checked like the beginning of July, so I gave them plenty of time. Nobody sent us our refund. Then when I called the lady's number, because I wrote everybody's number down,
what happened then?
The number didn't work. It said from Verizon, you can't call this number.
Tony, hold on a second. Are you worried? Hold on. Are you worried that you, in fact, have been scammed? Do you think that really was the IRS you were giving information to?
Well, that's just it. I don't know. I think I could be scammed. I mean, the letters I got
Hold on. Let me ask you this question, and then I'll let Terry speak too. Has anybody depleted any monies from your accounts?
No.
Okay, Terry, what do you want to say?
Okay, first of all, you need an IRS ID.me account, which they are hard to find anymore how to open that. Second of all, I'm going to suggest you file Form 911. It's called Request for Taxpayer Advocate Service Assistance. You can look that up at irs.gov. Just search for Form 911. You're going to need, it sounds to me like the IRS might have questioned your identity. That is a nightmare to get through. So I would start with IRS Form 911. It'll see how far that gets you.
That's all the time we've got for now. Feel free to call again next week. We'll get to more of your text messages on Wednesday as well. Okay,
Terry.
As always, thanks for your help.